Welcome to the healing power of your dreams on UK Health Radio with your dream divas, Teresa Chung
and Kelly Sullivan Walden. Each week, along with our recurring dream guest presenters and special guests, we'll explore the healing potential of your intuition by day and your dreams by night.
So join us
live each week
and let's discover the unexpected together.
Deep in your heart.
Wake me up. Wake me up inside.
Can't wake up.
Wake me up inside.
Save me.
Call my name and save me from the dark.
Wake me up.
Bid my blood to run.
Can't wake up.
Before I come undone.
Hello, and it's the healing power of your dreams time on UK Health Radio, the world's number one health talk radio station. I'm Teresa Chung.
And I am Kelly Sullivan Walden, and together we are your dream divas.
And what better way, Kelly, to begin than with Wake Me Up by Evanescence, because if there's one thing we believe...
it's that your dreams are not here to lull you asleep. No, they're not. They are here to wake you up. They ignore logic and deliver messages that can feel like late-night plot twists from the universe.
They're mysterious, emotional, even bizarre.
Flying llamas... showing up to work in your pajamas. Hey, that rhymes. Or worse yet, showing up underdressed or naked. Teresa, reality check.
But beneath all that surreal storytelling, dreams are doing something remarkable. They're waking us up to the truths we didn't even realize we needed to know.
It's so true. So ironically, the very thing we associate with sleep is actually one of the most powerful ways to awaken.
And that's why we explore every week how your dreams guide, heal, and yes, occasionally entertain you. Because dreams don't just replay what we already know, they love to surprise.
Speaking of surprise, a little bird told me that a certain dream diva is celebrating a birthday today. So on behalf of our 70,000 listeners, I'm going to just sing a little to you.
Okay.
Happy birthday to ya. Happy birthday. Happy birthday, Dream Diva Teresa. Happy birthday from UK Radio, Health Radio. I'll stop singing now, but happy birthday.
Phil didn't join in there. He's just looking.
Oh, Phil. Phil, help me. Help a
happy
girl
birthday.
Out.
Happy birthday. No one wants to hear me singing any time of the day.
Yes, we do. In that baritone? Oh, yes, we do. But there's another surprise that happened this week. Teresa, you were on ITV's This Morning, and you had an episode. I mean, you're on every month. You've been on 1,000 times, but you went completely viral. There was a piece that... tell us a little bit about... set the stage.
Dermot O'Leary had a dream that a famous pop star from the 90s, early 2000s, was extorting him for money, a pop princess, Rachel Stevens, S Club 7. And I accidentally said in the trailer, have you been in a compromising position with a celebrity in your dreams? And he jumped on it saying, my wife's listening. And so, yeah, all the papers picked it up. But it was all in the spirit of fun. And I loved it because it shone the spotlight and the nightlight on famous people appearing in your dreams. Because we do dream of people that we see on TV and on social media all the time.
Yes, and in compromising situations. But I always like to say that when we're in a compromising situation, like AKA having a little, I don't know, getting hot and heavy with someone in a dream, it's dreams are the ultimate hall pass because everyone in the dream is an aspect of ourselves. So we shouldn't ever get in trouble, Dermot. You're okay. Your wife should give you a hall pass.
It's finding harmony between opposites within you. Absolutely. And that song was a lovely surprise, Kelly. Thank
Yay!
You.
But I want... For your birthday, I would love it if all our listeners would go out and buy Teresa's latest books,
Oh.
Your Twin Flame Journey, if you haven't already, and also the Element Encyclopedia of Birthdays, which has sold something like nearly 500,000 copies. And I think we need, yeah. So I have my own copy. It will be meeting
Kelly,
me
I
at
will
home when
pay
I
you later. Let's
No, but we have gifts. We have gifts, not just for you, our listeners, but for ourselves as well. This is so it's all of our birthdays.
And
and we've got
your Dream of Festing Bible as well, Kelly. As
oh,
well. Not
thank
meant
you.
to forget that book, because we talk a lot about dreams and how they are a neglected manifesting tool. But that was a wonderful surprise. And I actually couldn't think of a better way to celebrate my birthday than to do this live show today with you both here and our listeners, and of course, Johan and all the wonderful visionary souls at UK Health Radio. So thank
Yeah.
you.
So, okay, so another birthday gift for you is our guests today. We've got Kelly Bulkley that'll be coming up a little bit later, who you're going to absolutely love. But I arranged for the universe to deliver to you Mark Nepo.
Whoa.
He's a million-selling New York Times best-selling author, poet, spiritual teacher, whose work explores what it truly means to awaken to life.
And his beloved book, The Book of Awakening, has inspired countless readers to embrace both the beauty and the vulnerability of being human.
And his latest work that will be coming soon, I believe, The Language of the Soul, it explores something deeply aligned with what we talk about here, Teresa, the incredible power of words to create worlds, to reveal, to heal, and to wake us up. Can we say wake us up then more times now, like 20 times so far, to wake us up to our true selves?
Through his writing, Mark reminds us that the language we use, both in our waking lives and within our dreams, can open doors to deeper understanding, connection, and transformation.
Mark's work is celebrated for its wisdom, compassion, and ability to touch the heart of what it means to be alive.
And today, we'll be exploring how his insights into language and awakening connect with the surprising, illuminating power of our night vision. Mark, welcome. Thank you for being so patient.
Oh.
Letting us celebrate before bringing you on.
Yes. Well, it's a joy to be with you, and happy birthday. I'm glad to be able to join that with you.
I'm going to plan every time I have a birthday now to do a show. This is great. I love it.
But well, Mark, maybe next year when we have Mark on again, because he has an event, a retreat coming up
yes.
in Milan in a year from now. So, and yeah, we have Julia Mossbridge on next month. We're going to be exploring some time travel. So I want everybody to mark their calendars for next year. This time, Teresa's birthday, we'll have Mark on next time because he's going to have a retreat coming up in Milan in a year.
And Mark also has a Substack and everything. Mark, before we dive into an interview with you, would you share how people can find out about you and your books, please?
Oh, yeah. So there's two websites, marknepo.com, and then also live.marknepo is where my webinars and are also introduced, and you can register and things. So you can find my books really pretty much anywhere. Thank you.
No, thank you. And I believe you wrote a book that has every day of the year. Kelly, you were talking to me about it because you have it as an app.
Oh, yes. The Book of Awakening. Yes, I have it. I've been listening to it. And it's so wonderful. It's so poetic. It's a book for every day. But maybe we should start at the beginning for the few people on the planet that don't yet know who you are. You came into this work from a health crisis, which interestingly, where the radio station that we're on right now was started by Johan Ilgenfritz, who's with us here, who also had a cancer scare and came right down to the wire, and his whole life changed. This network is a result of the alchemy that he found living. What do you call that when cancer can't live in an alkaline environment? So he's got the Alkaline Collective. So can you just tell us a little bit about what happened, your dark night of the soul?
So let me back up a little bit and you know, offer that I really believe that everyone will be given the chance to be dropped into the depth of life. Now, often it is through life-threatening situations, but you know, great love and great suffering are the great teachers. And so, you know, for me, and I'm just turned 75 last month. When I met someone my age when I was younger, I thought they were ancient. It doesn't seem so old now. But in my 30s, I was thrown into a rare form of lymphoma, and went through. I didn't have a near-death experience. I wasn't in a tunnel or anything, but I was in near-death situation over a three-year period. And so that is what happened to drop me into the depth of life. And several things happened through that. I had a tumor in my skull bone that grew to the size of a grapefruit. It vanished and was a miracle. There was a sister tumor that was on a rib in my back. And within 10 months, I was back in the hospital, having that removed surgically. And then I went through very severe chemo, which almost killed me. And so the first thing I learned was that miracle is a process, not an event. And everything is part of the miracle. And, you know, in that journey, several things happened to me. You know, one was that I've always been heart-centered, but I think before my cancer journey, I was really up in my head. And not through any wisdom in my part, but this experience, life-changing experience, dropped me into my heart. And so ever since, my mind has served my heart and not the other way around. And the other thing that has been really changed my life so deeply was, you know, I was raised Jewish. I have a great tie to the Jewish heritage. But I was blessed in that journey to have people from all walks of life, all traditions, formal and informal, offer me help and blessing and kindness. And so, you know, spit out of the mouth of the whale of cancer on the other side, I was not, and am still not, almost 40 years later, wise enough to know what worked and what didn't. And so I was challenged to believe in everything. And that has been at the center of all my teaching, all my books. I'm a student of all paths. You know, I believe in the common center of all paths, the unique gifts of all paths. So, you know, you know, it's the poet in me that sees, it's the philosopher in me that tries to make sense of what I see, but it's the cancer survivor in me that says, whatever it is that we learn has to be of use, has to be of use.
Mark, you're a poet. Your use of words to express so beautifully concepts. Thank you. Going to talk about your books, because you have written many books, obviously.
Many.
But one that many people know you most for, that the New York Times best-selling one. Would you mind sharing the journey towards that book and why you feel that one currently, because you've got more books in you, currently is the one that everybody like, oh, I've loved that book.
The Book of Awakening, yeah.
Yeah, that book, you know, this was after my cancer journey. You know, I have a lot of people in my life that are in, you know, recovery rooms, or are children or spouses of people in recovery. And so I've seen, you know, all those years ago, a lot of day books are really used. You know, they're in cars, they're in bathrooms, they're in back pockets. And so I really was struck that this is a kind of a modern form. Then if I could fill it with small doses of what matter, it might be a way to give back. And so I started trying to fill that form. And after about 3 years, I, you know, had the draft of the book, which was published in 2000 originally. Wow. And, you know, I think that one of the reasons it's touched so many people. And this is an affirmation not of me, but of when we speak from our authentic center, through the personal, we touch into the universal, you know, through, and that reaches us in the heart. You know, we have this gift we can conceptualize, but no, when I talk to you about the very details of my life, it opens to the common center of everyone's life, if I'm honest and authentic. And from that place, we're all touched. So my commitment, my learning in that book was I only went to write pieces of it mm-hmm. when I was in my heart. If I started to drift up into my mm-hmm. head, I stopped. And so I think that the fact that, you know, when people, and that became a training ground for all my other books, you know, that was my apprenticeship in wholehearted, all-embracing writing, which is, and it's also led me, I've discovered over the years that I really believe that the creative process and the introspective process and the intuitive process are really all the same. You know, I just happen to write it down because that's how I learn, and the books are the trail of my authentic learning. And that's one of the so a lot of the things I've learned from the creative process are really, you know, and for instance, you know, when I write poems, and for me, poetry is not how words are arranged on a page. Poetry is the unexpected utterance of the soul.
Oh,
like a dream.
Like a dream.
Like a dream.
Exactly. Yeah. And I know we have a break to get to in just a moment, but I just want to say that I was telling in preparation for this interview, I've been talking to people like, I get to talk to Mark Nepo. Oh my goodness. And I was saying how I feel when I'm reading your work. It's similar to how I used to feel when I would read Ernest Holmes, where I used to feel like I didn't even need to read the book. I could just feel it, and I would shake, and I would have this attuning. So your book is a tuning fork to a higher frequency with beautiful language to lull the senses. But I just so appreciate the space, who you are, what you do, but mostly the space that you come from. So I am so sorry to have to bring us to the ad
Thank
break,
you.
But everyone hold that dream. I'm going to see you right on the other side of this very short break.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Wake up, beautiful dreamers. We're back. And I'm so grateful we are here with Mark Nepo, the author of so many books, The Book of Awakening And coming up, the book, wait, it's about soul. It's about the soul. His book is, what's the
Language
name
of
of your new book that's coming out?
the soul,
The
The
language
language
of
of
the
the
soul.
language of the soul. But we were talking about the language of dreams and how they work in your life. So how do dreams factor into your creative process?
Well, I've always had a very active dream life, and I very much feel, I know as you do, that when I am able to be open and to dreams, they give me so much more of a an all-encompassing view of the currents of life that enable me to connect the dots, that enable me to feel the web of connection, the kinship with all things. And so, my native, even when I was a child, metaphor is kind of my native language, and even before I knew what a metaphor was. And so very often the images and the connections and the questions that come in dream become koans and riddles and invitations for me to explore further. And that will often, and one of the reasons that I've been blessed to be prolific is that, writing has become listening and taking notes. And I always write about what I need to learn. If I had written about what I know, I would have written very little.
I love that humility. Thank you, Mark. And I'm going to bring in someone to the conversation now, our resident guest presenter, actor, author, and intuitive coach, Phil Webster, who I know has been busy looking at your upcoming title, The Language of the Soul, The Power of Words. And I know Phil has a few questions he'd love to ask you, Mark. So over to you, Phil.
Thanks, Teresa. And hi, Mike. Yeah, very, very much enjoying it. And that's really where I'd like to come in. Actually, following on from something that Kelly said, when she just said before the break that she felt that she doesn't even need to read your words for it to resonate. I thought that was quite interesting. And that kind of leads me to something. So there was a quote from the physicist David Bohm, which really resonated with me when I first stepped into the spiritual arena some years ago. And he said, I hope I'm getting it right, our greatest obstacle to understanding consciousness is our language. So, in terms of exploring consciousness, is language a bridge to the truth, or is it a means to an end that we must eventually transcend in order to see an even deeper truth?
Yeah, thank you. So that's really is at the heart of the new book. So, in the modern world, we have tended, and we can see this echoed in all of the social media and the film of technology that separates us from the direct experience of life. In the modern world, and I mean that in the last 300 years, we have leaned on language to label and contain things. And language in its most original and divine form has always been a placeholder. One of the key I use as an epigraph for the book, a saying attributed to Buddha, who one story is that when he was teaching at night to his students, he felt that they were too enwrapped with what he was saying. And he stopped and he said, and it was a full moon, he said, my words are only fingers pointing to the moon. Make sure you look at the moon. And I think in the spirit of that, what I've done, and this is really the book comes out of my teaching over the years, I've always been interested in word origins as best we can find them, because words erode over time like pieces of nature. So the more we go back, the more whole they tend to be and the more helpful they tend to be. But they always are pointing to what can't be named. And so they are portals to, just like dreams, to our relationship with the ineffable. So it's not, again, it's to reclaim these words. And I'll give you an example. And I love this word, the word genius. Now, in the modern world, we think of genius as David Bohm, Einstein, you know, Itzhak Perlman, Baryshnikov, you know, on and on. Someone who has an incredible particular gift that's extraordinary. That's not what it originally means. The word genius originally means attendant spirit. Everyone has a genius. It goes by a thousand names. We call it soul in the West, Dharma, Atman, Holy Ghost. You know, you could call it any, there's so many different names, nothing, everything, nature. But what's important is our relationship to it. So the word genie shares a common root with genius. And so the famous Aladdin and his lamp, it isn't a cartoon of rub the lamp and you'll get what you want. It's that if you embrace the lamp of your life, your attendant spirit will show up.
Ooh.
That's to help guide you.
Everything you said there, that's you're endlessly quotable, and just something that I wrote. Something that I noted down today from the book, that from the upcoming book, was the essence of our living can only be pointed to, never contained. This is the true province of words, to point to and open, not to label and contain, which I think was what you just said there. I just found that fascinating, that's the one that I went to go with, and that's everything you just said. Yeah. Yeah. So I've heard you also say that a spiritual warrior must always have a crack in the heart to let the mysteries in. Mm. So we live in a culture that prioritizes healing and pushing through pain. So how do we learn to hold the crack just open enough without being consumed by suffering that it might let in?
Yeah, and that's a great question. And like I always say, you know, I don't have answers, but let's look at it together, you know. I think this is one of the great paradoxes. You know, the word suffer itself means to feel keenly. So we don't have to suffer to gain wisdom. We have to feel keenly, because that also is how we know joy. So we, you know, I have found there are two ways that we tend to grow, basically by willfully shedding or by being broken open. And if we don't willfully shed, don't worry, we'll be broken open. And when we're opened, you know, I think one of the hardest things for all of us is not to stay preoccupied with what has opened us, but to stay a student of the opening. You know, my cancer, I mean, there are a thousand ways we could be a victim or go the other way. I'm going to conquer. Yeah, I'm going to be a hero, you know. But what's most important is to me has been, I have to acknowledge and feel the human journey of that breaking open. And then I have to go through the opening. That's the transformation. That's the challenge. You know, and so this is another amazing word. We would never imagine this word, the word algebra. Algebra comes from the Arabic. It was a math system created by an Islamic mathematician in the 1100s. And the word means the reunion of broken parts.
What? That's a new twist on math. If I had known that, I would have been better at math in school.
Well, this leads us into the algebra of truth. It's just, Phil, what your question opens into. How do we help each other endure the breaking, so we can become students of the reunion of broken parts? The reunion of broken parts. And this leads us to the word remember, which isn't about nostalgia. It literally means to rejoin the members. So the true purpose of memory is to make things whole. And so let me share, this was a very important dream for me in my 30s. And I was in a dream group back then that met once every 3 weeks for 2 years, and led by a Jungian priest who had shepherded our cancer support group. So I just signed up for anything he did because I was not done learning from him. Mm-hmm. And so I had my first, the whole session would be devoted to one person's dream. And my dream at the time was, that really was very graphic. Again, not as a premonition, but to get my heart's attention. So in the dream, I was visiting my grandparents' home, which was in Baldwin, New York, near the city, near New York City. It was during the day. In the dream, there was some kind of, you know, serial killer loose. And I was checking the house just to make sure everything was okay. And as I went in the house, I had this feeling like something's not right. And it was empty. But I went to the upstairs bathroom, and I looked in the bathroom, and there was a dismembered boy. And then I woke up. And so when we, with the help of everyone in the dream group, as we looked at that, and this is my first introduction to what remember really means, as all parts, as you said, Kelly, of all parts of the dream are parts of us, I was now at an age where I was individuated enough that I was ready to put the members of my small boy back together.
Oh, wow. Oh, my goodness.
Oh,
this is
so.
And that dream will change my life.
Wow.
I'm going to jump in there. That dream changed my life. This is the money moment, isn't it, of this episode? Wow.
Yeah, oh, the healing power of your dreams.
That dream changed my life. Thank you, Phil and Mark, for that. Whew, I'm overwhelmed. That was an amazing conversation to hear, and especially on today for me, being a special day for me. I can't thank you enough, Mark, for waking us up to the incredible power of our words. The words we use, we don't pay nearly enough attention to their power. And you are reminding us that transformation doesn't just happen out there in the world. It begins within us, in the quiet language of our soul, doesn't it, Kelly?
Yes. You've given us so much to reflect on, that little boy in all of us, to remember him. So I feel like my inner dialogue and my dreams have just been given a poetic upgrade. The fingers pointing at the moon. Don't get caught. Don't get caught with the finger.
And I hope right, everyone Teresa? Listening is empowered to dream big too from the inside out. Oh, wow.
Yes. But before we let you go, Mark, I know you've got to go, but stay with us in spirit because we're about to dive even deeper into the dream world.
Yeah, we're going to discuss dreams as creativity hacks, problem solvers, and even spiritual portals with our next guest.
Oh, yes, because if dreams are the ultimate wake-up call, which they are, then this next guest has practically built the library on how they work. We're delighted to welcome Kelly Bulkley. He's a PhD psychologist of religion who focuses on dreams and their profound role in the human experience. He's the director of the Sleep and Dream Database, a senior editor of the APA journal, Dreaming, and a former president of the International Association for the Study of Dreams, which has its yearly dream conference. It's actually coming up in person, IRL, in real life, in Asheville, Oregon, at the same time, Teresa, you're going to love this, as the annual Shakespeare Festival. So you can find out more about the Dream Conference at asdreams.org.
Of course, we are the stuff that dreams are made on. I always love getting that Shakespeare quote in, but enough about the IA. Back to Kelly, not you, Kelly.
It's oh,
The other
So
one,
confusing.
he's the author and editor of numerous influential books, including The Wilderness of Dreams, An Introduction to the Psychology of Dreaming, Dreaming Beyond Death, Dreaming in the World's Religions, Lucid Dreaming, Big Dreams, The Scribes of Sleep, 2020 Dreams, and The Spirituality of Dreaming, with even more on the way.
In other words, if Dreams had a research department, Kelly Bulkley would be running it. He makes us Kellys look good. So I'm so happy you're here to join us. But before we get into Kelly,
Yeah.
let's see the dreamscape. Let's set the dreamscape with a little wake-up music from Inception. Is that okay with you, Teresa?
Inception again, Kelly. You need to dream
Always,
a
I'm
little bigger,
obsessed.
darling. Okay.
Okay. Well, when it comes to dreams within a dream, within a dream, within a dream, I like to
Within a
keep
dream,
things
within a
layered.
dream.
Within a dream, within a dream. So, would you be willing, Johan? Give us a little few
Take it
bars of
away,
Edith
Johan.
Piaf.
Of the wake-up theme from Inception.
No regrets. No, I will have no regrets. All the things that went wrong, for at the last, I have learned to be strong.
UK House Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movement and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
UK House Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Wake up, dreamers. We're back with Dream Professor Kelly Bulkley.
Kelly, I think we're getting an upgrade on this show now. Dr. Dream, I got the wrong Kelly.
No,
Oh, professor now. Oh, you still relevant?
I know, I know. I'm so happy to share the stage with the other Kelly, the only other Kelly on the planet. So
Welcome,
happy you're here.
Kelly,
oh,
the
it's nice
other
to be
Kelly.
here. Sorry, I got to get my cat out of the lap.
Oh, it's all right.
Oh
We've
no,
got
cats are allowed. Cats and dogs are very, we're
dogs are
very friendly
actually
here.
essential for dreamers. But Kelly, I'm going to jump right in. Thank you so much for appearing on our show. We're
Oh, happy
truly
to be here.
honored.
Happy Happy birthday to you too. That's a
Oh, you
exciting
listened.
day.
Oh, this is great. Let's do this every time we have a birthday. Then
That's it. We've established a precedent for the next 5,000 years.
Oh my goodness, I'm not going to be around that long. Or maybe with dreams. But Kelly, I'm going to leap in with a question before I hand you to our guest presenter, Phil. And I know the other Kelly, you won't be able to stop her talking.
No, we've got a lot to talk about.
Across cultures and religions, dreams are treated as sources of wisdom, as you well know, or even divine communication.
Yes.
From your research, and my goodness, your research is in depth, do you now think dreams actually contain meaning, or are humans simply very good at creating meaning from them after the fact?
We're very good at doing the latter, for sure, but I do believe dreams have meaning independent of our projections and our interpretive activities. The dreams do have their own intentions and kind of core intelligence. So, yeah, I mean, there's research that I think has come to support that. And it's an uncanny thought that the dreams aren't just random passing clouds that we project meaning on, but there's something there. There's an intentionality and autonomy. So, but I think that is the case.
I was just playing devil advocate there. You're speaking to the converted.
Love the devil. Devil's got to be
Kelly and myself. But you've worked extensively with large-scale dream data through the Sleep and Dreams database. Can you give me some surprising patterns or insights about human psychology that only becomes visible when you actually study thousands of dreams instead of just individual ones? Because you're looking at it collectively now, aren't you?
Yeah. Patterns. Yeah, yeah. Well, what we're able to do now is what humans have been trying to do for forever, which is discern these deeper patterns, these deeper tidal rhythms of our dreaming experience. And it's hard to do when all you have is papyrus and ink, a quill or even graph paper. But now we have computer technology to enable us to study these large collections of dreams with much more depth and precision. And so we're still kind of in the shallow end of the pool, I'd say, in terms of what we're learning. But one thing that comes through very clearly is dreams are a remarkably accurate index of our relationships. Whoever is most important to us emotionally, and it can be positive or negative, those are the people who tend to appear most often in our dreams, which is, that's not a shock, but it is, we can see that now with such clarity and such precision. And if you gave me a 100 of your dreams right now, I know nothing else about you. And I just looked at the statistical frequencies of your word usage, I could tell a lot about you. It's really reached that level where we can see these patterns. And that's just kind of, like I said, a kind of the surface level. And the years to come are going to be fun because we're going to start going deeper and deeper.
Don't leave your dream journal lying around, everyone. Put it somewhere safe.
It does have creepy potentials. Yeah, no, we got to be careful. This is why we have to be very mindful and ethically reflective as we pursue this. Anything that can be used for great good has an opposite potential, too.
I'm glad you mentioned science and neuroscientists at science and AI. Do you think, we're getting closer now than ever to understanding the nature of dreams? Or are we at risk of explaining away something that should remain mysterious?
Yeah, I'm not worried on dreams' behalf in the sense like we're going to exhaust their mystery. Dreams are vast. They're, I think you said at the opening, they're a spiritual portal. There's a sense in which they open us to bigger realities, bigger truths. And we're not, we can block ourselves off from that. That's harming us, perhaps. I'm not worried about dreams. So, so it's a matter more of how do we enhance people's awareness of their own dreaming powers and capability. That's really my lifelong goal.
As is ours. Thank you. And as a bridge now, because I know you're researching Shakespeare and dreams, I'm going to just hand you in the very capable hands of our presenter, Phil, who's an actor. Phil, can you quote some Shakespeare for us?
Absolutely not, no.
Tis the moon, I say it is the moon.
I'm 50 years old, I can't remember anything.
What dreams may come?
What dreams may come? Juliet, Juliet. Okay.
Yeah, not my arena, Shakespeare. But I've got to say, I
voice
feel
like that, Phil.
We still love you, Phil.
Within this the dream sphere, I feel completely unequipped. Like, dreams aren't my arena at all. But
Phil,
my arena
you know
could
the
be.
title of this show.
No, in terms of expertise,
he's living the dream. He is the dream. Okay, we're going to let him get his question out. Sorry.
Well, I tend to lead more towards the esoteric, consciousness, life after death, all that kind of stuff. So I'm going to go there, and I'm going to come in with a very subjective, personal experience, actually. And again, I feel that all three of you guys would wrap this up in a second if I asked any of you this. Okay, so I had a very profound dream, which I believe was. And I'm going way out there. I believe that it was a shared death experience with my mum passing over. Okay, so it was incredibly profound, as you might imagine. And it was unlike any other dream that I've had before or had since. It's quite curious, have you actually heard of that before? If anyone talking of that particular scenario before? Or then in a more general sense, when we dream of loved ones that have passed over, is it simply like a process of just dealing with grief, or are we actually being visited?
These are some of the most impactful dreams that people have. If you sort of look across the world and through history, dreams relating to death, generally dreams in which a loved one is we anticipate someone about to die, or after they've died, they return to us in some form or other. And they've inevitably, this is why I believe dreams in some ways are the roots of religion as such, because, you know, I infer, you know, hundreds of thousands of years back, humans, their mate dies, a child dies, an elder dies, and they come back in a dream, and then they wake up. And what do humans naturally do when that kind of thing happens? They think about what part of us endures and survives beyond physical death. And we do indeed find this in cultures all around the world throughout history. So it's a real human experience. It's a profound human experience. And it's too easy to kind of wave it away as, oh, that's just wish fulfillment. That's just, you know, your grief getting the better of you. When you sort of bracket those judgments out and just ask people, what was it like? What did that feel like? What was the texture of the dream, the smell, the context? These are profound spiritual experiences that ultimately, I think, lead to the kind of realization that even though the physical relationship has ended, this person is gone, no longer with us, an emotional, spiritual connection endures and remains. And that and can grow and develop and go new places. And many spiritual traditions recognize this and give people a context in which to do something, you know, kind of meaningful with that. You know, sharp turn into Shakespeare land, but this is what the Protestants did when they came into Elizabethan England. They said, yeah, no more purgatory. Like, no more worrying about ghosts or souls or anything. It's like, you die, it's up or down, and that's that. And people are like, whoa, that's not the way we think about things. Shakespeare's Hamlet, this is one interpretation of it, is a reflection on what's been lost when we no longer speak to our ghosts, our elders who have passed and come back with teachings, with important truths that are necessary. So, we deny these dreams at our peril, I guess, is the...
I want to jump in for a second. One of the things you say in the spirituality of dreaming is that it does come up. When you talk about dreams, often the conversation of death does tend to be part of the conversation. So Phil, you talking about this kind of shared dream with your mother at her passing, it, from my perspective, if I may, because part of my dream coming into dreams is from a series of tandem dreams that I used to have with my little sister, not on the edge of death, but we still have dreams where we're in the same space together in the dream. And it feels like it's like a shared soul connection that is beyond the body. And so it takes it to another place. I think what you were talking about, Phil, not only were you dreaming about your mom's passing, but it was around the same time as her passing, right? Like you were
Well,
connecting with that, with her.
this is the thing. I mean, there's so much. This opens up so much, and I don't want to take the this away from Kelly. It was after the fact, the day after.
Okay. The day
But
after, but
then
still.
time and being relative and what have you. It was so profound, so detailed, more than anything I've had before. And it seemed to be in traditional NDE experiences. It was very much in line with that, like I was witnessing it. But anyway, sorry.
At the
No,
very
that's
least, doesn't
fantastic.
it, Kelly, does it seem like it's an affirmation of the connection that he has with his mom and it's ongoing?
I mean, this is my mother and I co-wrote a book some years back called
Oh,
"Dreaming
yeah.
Beyond Death." So where we she's a hospice chaplain for many years. It's really her book that I kind of helped her put together. But we talk a lot about this, and she was a caregiver, and so there's kind of a pragmatic aspect to this, where someone who's grieving, who's mourning, who's lost someone, it's easy to as a defense to get caught up in, kind of the metaphysics of, is it real? Is it not real? Is it from my mind, my brain? Does it, the grieving is what matters, the feelings, the emotions. And these dreams are just, I think, as you said, Kelly, they're these emotional bonds that just endure, that survive death, that extend beyond death. And that, wherever it came from, whatever it is, maybe it's your brain, who knows? Who cares? If it really is helping at this time, and if it's hit the dreamer, in this case, with such power, and unmistakable emphasis, I think that's just that's a signal to like let that rational part of the mind just, set aside and just concentrate on the on that grieving process.
Kelly, can I just jump in there? Am I correct? Because I know you've studied this in depth, and in certain cultures, a person who is bereaved and grieving is believed to be kind of like a bridge to the afterlife, and their prayers are sought after because they are believed to be in that kind of twilight phase. Am I correct there that it's a the grieving state is actually they're almost believed to have like your the person who is grieving has one foot in heaven and one on earth?
I think either Kelly could answer that. I think you said just Kelly generically there,
Say, I will.
but
You go, Kelly. You go, Kelly B. Kelly Bulkley.
Hey, Phil, I've got to say this.
Kelly
Any Kelly will do. Any
W.
Kelly will do. We're all the same after all,
I mean, these are reflections of, in a way, of our deep humanity and our the importance of relationality in our lives. I mean, I believe that in some ways, living in a world of a kind of rationalistic world in which we do, dreams are kind of an insulting reminder of our enduring connectedness and the network of not just humans, but non-human agencies, energies, powers that we are always in connection with, always in relationship with. And a death tears a hole in that network, in that web. I mean, we feel it. But dreaming is part of not necessarily weaving that, covering that hole up. It's always going to be there, but growing, with that hole as part of one's ongoing life.
Dreams are an evergreen conversation, but at this moment, there's something very timely that's happening in the world. We're kind of we're in a war. There was a ceasefire today. A lot of people are, I'm talking to a lot of people that are having a hard time sleeping because there's so much stress, having a hard time dreaming. Yet in your book, The Spirituality of Dreaming, you talk about very important dreams that did come through during very difficult times, like Martin Luther King's dream in the kitchen. I had never heard this particular dream. Can you talk about that? And Harriet Tubman as well.
Well, I mean, these are examples of dreams and dreamers who are dreaming not just for themselves. And this is one of the big lessons, I think, of studying dreams historically and culturally, is that in most communities, there are, I mean, everybody is a dreamer. We are all dreamers. There are also big dreamers. There are people who have special aptitudes, special something or other. It may have started early in childhood. It may have come on later. these people tend to become healers. They tend to become shamans. They tend to become leaders or teachers of one kind or another. And when communities reach a moment of crisis, of conflict, of uncertainty, that's the time when these people really are needed collectively. Yes. And we're at that kind of time. So the Spirituality Dreaming book, I really do kind of, you know, urge big dreamers to think, who tend to be, you know, like myself, you know, kind of introverted, kind of shy, not really out in the world so much. But like, this is a time when vision is needed, when some sense of direction, there's so much confusion, there's so much apocalyptic fear. Yeah. Just simple hope, you know, is, and dreams are nothing if not a source of enduring hope, of you know, a vision of what can be beyond what is now, no matter how horrible the now may be.
And your work, that big dream, no, a vision of what can be. Kelly,
it's so important
to have you back, because another word artist here. Wow, yeah. Giving yeah. us so much dream and soul food. Where can people find out about you, Kelly? What's the best website?
I have an Instagram account. I've got a Sleepy Dream database. I'm very excited about the elsewhere.to dream journaling app. That's really I think opening up possibilities for using these kinds of sorts of insight and knowledge broadly, and, you know, making these ideas accessible in ways they never have been before. I was a big hater of this kind of interpretation, AI generated stuff before, but with dream interpretation, it's amazing. I'm amazed. I'm very excited about the future on that front.
I'm looking forward to seeing you at the International Association for the Study of Dreams. Thank you, Kelly Bulkley, for representing the Kellys so well. Thank you so much.
It was an honor. Yeah, thank you, guys.
What an extraordinary journey we've had today. Thank you, Kelly, Mark, and of course our guest presenter, Phil, and the other Kelly from The Awakening Power of Words to the Limitless Landscape of Our Dreams.
Oh my goodness. And Teresa, what a great birthday present for you to bring these wonderful guests on it. We've traveled through poetry, psychology, and unexpected plot twists, courtesy of our subconscious mind, those honest friends.
What a beautiful reminder that dreams don't just visit us at night. They challenge us, stretch us, and wake us up to parts of ourselves we didn't even know were there.
I know. So when you combine the power of words, as we explored today, it's like having two wake-up calls instead of just one.
Dreams and words, the language of your soul. Though, of course, dreams still have the edge.
They sure do. They absolutely do. So if you wake up at 3 a.m. with a revelation, make sure. Write it down, always. So
until next time, keep dreaming and keep
awakening. And keep awakening.
And Johan's going to play us out, if we have time, with a song.
Happy birthday, Teresa. Happy birthday.
Your dreams. Happy birthday, everyone, across the
world. Sweet dreams. Thank you.
Every time I look in the mirror, all these lines in my face getting clearer. The past is gone. Isn't that true?